Well, good evening to you all. It's good to be with you here at Bradford. And I echo so much of what Brother Kevin had to say. I'm kind of very involved in school, involved in the church. Nobody knows what to do about anything. As soon as you open your mouth, you look stupid. And so it is, as I was coming into church tonight, my phone was blowing up from the ministers. What are we supposed to do tomorrow morning? Should we have church? And what kind of testimony does it look like? And so I just replied, I'm a few hundred miles away. I'm laughing at you as you make a decision. And I said, this is unprecedented. And it is not funny, and I feel terrible for the elderly that are dying. But in some ways, it's kind of like a social experiment. Like, we're seeing things. I've never seen empty store shelves and things. I don't know what it's like up here, but in Berks County, they're wiping the store shelves out. And, yeah, it's kind of interesting, but I feel terrible for the people that are suffering and dying. The county I come from doesn't have a single case yet confirmed, and so I want to have the right attitude. I don't want to be scared, but I don't want to take it lightly. But I'm glad I could come. And I want to say, too, if you decide to shut down tonight, that's fine. Like, if you're like, something happens during the night, don't feel bad for me at all. My wife and I are actually having our 25th anniversary this week, and we never get to get away, ever, because I have a disabled son, and so we just don't. And so this weekend we had somebody come in to help take care of him with my oldest son. So we were glad to get away. So if something happens during the night and you're like, we don't want to gather tomorrow morning, don't feel bad. And I'll just drive home happily and it will not be a problem. I don't want to, you feel, oh, he's here. We got to have him speak. So glad to be with you. Glad it worked out. I'm going to be speaking this weekend a few sessions about the family, and that's what Kevin had suggested I can do, and it's a subject that I really enjoy talking about. Looking around, looks like you got your share of young families here, and it's just an area of interest to me, something I really enjoy, and hopefully I can be not boring, and I can be challenging, and we can have a good time together. I'm not a power preacher like my dad. I kind of just talk in more of these monotone terms, much more of a teacher, and I enjoy that aspect of it. I'll quickly tell you about my family a little bit, simply because you're like, you're talking about the family this weekend, and we don't know anything about your family. So I will do that just for that. My oldest son is 24. His name is Ryan, and he has muscular dystrophy. So he is fully disabled, has a power chair. And my wife and I and my oldest son take care of him, and he's a blessing. He's serving the Lord, has a wonderful testimony of the Lord's work in his life in spite of his disability, and so he's a happy boy. But that consumes a lot of our time, is taking care of our disabled son. His name is Ryan. Then my next daughter is about 22, and she's married. Tiffany is married, and then I have a daughter, Sherry, and she's 19 or 20. She teaches at Fairview Christian School, and then I have a son, Tyler. He's a junior at Fairview Christian School, and then my youngest daughter is Shayna, and she is 12, and she attends Fairview Christian School. So my children range in those ages from 12 to 24, and I love them all dearly. I love being a father, and it is one of the joys of my life. Tonight I'm going to speak about commitment to our families. And we all know and we say we need to be committed. We want to be committed to our families. But putting it in shoe leather and really being committed and showing it can be a whole lot more difficult at times. We've always been taught our order of priorities. When I was a student back at SMBI, that was in 1992, and probably interestingly enough, some of you know I'm headed there Monday to take three of Clayton Shank's weeks. Clayton Shank obviously passed away, and they needed somebody quickly to teach for a few weeks that lives in the city. I'm not sure why they didn't call one of you, but I'm headed there. I was there with Rod a long time ago, and so I'm headed there. But I remember the Christian family class I was in. The Val Yoder taught. He taught, make sure you order your priorities, and you put God, and then your ministry, and then your God, your family, then your ministry. You put your family ahead of your ministry. And sometimes that's a little bit hard to separate because we always have God first and we kind of almost want to put our ministry right there. And in shoe leather, I find it's easy to push our family behind our ministry because all those other demands that our ministry has and our jobs and everything, that it's so easy for the family to get pushed down. And with your family, prioritizing your family, putting your family first, it's not always the most glamorous job. I am a father of, at one time I had four teenagers, now they're kind of moving out of the teenager, but teenagers they're not always like praising you. Dad, you look great. Dad, you're dressing sharp. Dad, ba-ba-ba, dad, ba-ba-ba. You know what? They're not always like, it's not the most glamorous job. And I sang with Garment of Praise. It's one of the few times I was here, embarrassingly enough. I have not been up here much, but I've been here. I sang here with SMBI and with Garment of Praise, and maybe I was here one other time. Maybe. But I sang with them for, 18 years? And one of the reasons I quit, hard to believe, 11, 12 years ago, is because I had too many things going. And my family didn't want to go with me anymore. They'd be like, psh, Dad, yeah, right. Go sing, Dad. We're staying home. Not because they didn't like me. It's they heard it all. And you know what? That really bothered me. It was like, here I am. You know, I've got to go. And you know what? A year, two or three into that, I'm just like, nope, I'm not going to do it anymore. And I don't regret it at all. Singing was fun. Singing was fun. I enjoyed it. But all the things that went along with it, those late Sunday nights and those practices and all that stuff, I really didn't miss it all, and I don't have any regrets. And the big reason I moved on was my family. And, you know, it never once bothered me. And having people appreciate your singing and clap when you're done, that never really moved me. And I didn't miss that at all. And I was just as happy and enjoyed it more being home with my family, where they would just not give me that praise and not make you look good because your family is so honest and right with you. Like you, I have a busy life. Over the last 20 years, I've had a really busy life. Too busy. And a lot of that was my own fault. I'm obviously a pastor at the church, and I was principal at Fairview Christian School for 13 years. Now I'm a teacher because I just needed more time for some other things, so I handed the principal's job off. So I was doing that. I was principal. We have about 150 in our school, so that keeps you busy. And some of you know of a teacher salary. You guys teachers? You know how teacher salaries work? Okay, all right, I don't need to explain it to you then. Okay, you know, I don't need to explain it. All right, yep. Teacher salaries, and God bless all you school teachers. So I had to do a few other things to feed my family, and it was clean some dentist offices in the evenings and had some rental units and pastored a church. So life was busy. And when school would start, it would be like, wow, life's going to get busy, and we have some. You know, one night a week, I was usually at church, and one night a week, I was working somewhere, and one night a week, we usually had a sporting event, and one night a week, I was at church. So basically, four nights were almost committed for many years. Now, that has changed a bit, and we're not doing as much cleaning anymore, and some things have changed, but life can get busy. I don't know. Is it McKean County? I always want to call it Bradford County. Maybe it may, but that's over there or some over that way. I don't know how it is up here, but I'm guessing it's the same. We can get busy and we can just go, go, go. And I don't know how many times I said to my wife as we were coming across 219 or whatever, wow, this country is different up here. This is not the city I'm used to as we're coming across and just seeing the different world. And I'm guessing in some ways it's a little more laid back in some areas, but I don't know. But we show our commitment to our family as we take time and we build relationships with them, prioritizing them. Obviously, it's so missing in our world today. And society is so rejecting anything that's in here. Society so does not look for it and is not patterning their life after the Bible. And so many of the answers seem painfully, they're so obvious in here. We have so many answers to the world's chaos. But yet they miss it. These principles work. And even the ungodly follow them and they don't know it. That's what I chuckle sometimes. Like, you're actually following the Bible and you don't know it. When my brother got married, that's probably close to 30 years ago. He was working at a secular place at the time. And I remember my dad, power preacher, I think it was a wedding and an evangelistic service broke out with my dad's preaching. And I remember some people saying to him afterwards, they're like, they said to Brian, once he got back to work, man, your dad acted like you can't have a happy marriage unless you're a Christian. And maybe it came across that way, but the point was, if you're going to have a happy marriage, you're going to follow the principles in the Bible. You just don't know it. And that's okay, but you're following those principles that it teaches. Turn with me, if you would, to Deuteronomy 6. I am not going to, it's not necessarily going to be a Bible lesson this weekend. Tomorrow morning I'll spend a little more time, but I am not going to have a Bible lesson tonight. Maybe you could call it a fireside chat, more in that vein. But Deuteronomy 6, I think they call it the Shema, and it is probably very familiar. And so I'd like to read these verses here at the beginning, from Deuteronomy 6, beginning with verse 4. Deuteronomy 6, verse 4 says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down, when thou risest up. And you shall bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes. And thou shalt write them upon the posts of thy house and on thy gates. And it shall be, when the Lord thy God shall have brought thee into the land which he sware unto thy fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give thee great and goodly cities, which thou buildest not, and houses full of all good things, which thou fillest not, wells digged, which you didn't dig, vineyards, olive trees, which thou plantest not, when thou shalt have eaten and be full, beware, lest thou forget the Lord which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage. Thou shalt fear the Lord thy God, and serve him, and shalt swear by his name. Ye shall not go after other gods, of the gods of the people which are round about you. For God is a jealous God among you, lest the anger of the Lord thy God be kindled against you, and destroy thee from off the face of the earth. Ye shall not tempt the Lord your God as ye tempted him in Massah, but ye shall diligently keep the commandments of the Lord your God and his testimonies and his statutes which he hath commanded thee. And thou shalt do that which is right and good in the sight of the Lord, that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest go in and possess the good land which the Lord sware unto thy fathers." And this was a teaching tool. I understand observant Jews would twice daily recite this. It was often their last words before they went to sleep. And parents would, this was a big part of them. And it talks in here of teaching. And you've got, and how much hard work it is. Boy, you want to get something repetition. You want to get something into somebody's head. It is repeat, repeat, repeat. And I marvel how it is in school. And those monthly memory works that I don't know if you still do, but I've been around school a long time as a student and a teacher. And I can almost tell you every time I read a scripture, whether it was a monthly memory work at some point in my life, because it's still half there. You know what? I memorized that. It was a long time ago, but it's still there. And so that stuff sticks, and that's what we have to do. Teaching is hard work. Two words I think of teaching are model and train. We model godliness to our children and everybody around us, and we train them. Of course, I'm a father, so I think more of fathering. But fathering is changing. And how different it is. And how, I say, much more involved we are. I am in the life of like my son than in some ways my dad was in my life. You know, my father was a baby boomer raised by, what was it, Greatest Generation, they call them. That stuff's so overrated, but I really enjoy it, all that millennial stuff. You know, it's too much fun, but it's overrated. Maybe like some other things we're dealing with right now. You just don't quite know what to do with it. But they were a generation that was different. And those men, my father's generation and my grandfather's generation, they did an awful lot of disciplining and teaching of hard work. And both those were good. And that's, I would have done exactly the same thing if I would have been in their generation. In fact, I say way too many men today, my age, are half upset at their fathers because of the relationship they had with their dad and how it was. And we've learned a lot. But I frequently say, I would have been the same. I would have done the same thing. That's who they were. That's what they were taught. That's all they knew to do. And this whole relationship that we are really taught a lot today, and I give Dr. Dobson some credit. Don't agree with him on everything, but some of those guys have taught us some things. That how much it relationship and the discussions we have with our sons and the way we relate to them has changed. And I know that is not only in our Anabaptist circles. I know that is all across the board. We tend to be critical of our own circle sometimes. I think the preacher, I know it was a radio preacher, but I don't want to be quoted, but I have to think it was David Jeremiah. I'm not sure, but I heard this one time and I was listening. I think it was in the middle of the night. I woke up but he was talking about his relationship to his father. And the Jeremiahs are very good athletes. They're basketball players or football players. And I'm pretty sure that David Jeremiah himself, if he was the one that was talking, he was a very good basketball player. But yet his father was very hard on him. And the only, after a game or something, the only thing they would talk about was the shot that he missed. It was always a way to be critical. And that was just what that relationship was. And as he was looking in his father's coffin when his father had died, you know, he was thinking thoughts of, wow, now my dad is actually not going to, he can't criticize me. He can't point something out that I'm not doing right. And it's a sad commentary, but a lot of those things happen. Now, I'm a father. I consider myself a young father. I know those tendencies. I have a son that's a really good basketball player. I don't want to brag on him, but he's a really good basketball player. And what's easy for me to do, too? Son, that shot was a bad shot. You know, you should not have taken that. He, too, we have a really good relationship. He takes it well. But you know what? We want to fix things. You should not have done that. And I think we have a good enough relationship that I can do that. Because of the many good things I say to him, I can do that. So it has changed. I'm not going to be long-winded on you tonight, but I have a number of things that I tried to put into practice that I'm going to spend the rest of my time on, and things that I have tried to do as a parent and as a father to build those relationships with my family. Number one is obvious, taking time. And it gets so much harder as your children get older. I love to spend time with my children. I've spent a lot of time with my children. Now it's like it is so hard. I look at some of the families here and I miss those days. Those days were a lot of fun. I did so many things growing up when my children were young. Because like many of you, I had that, you know, I don't remember quite anymore, but was it 7, 5, 3? You know, it's a great age, and one activity with them is fun for all of them. And I prioritized, as a young father, spending time with my children. The one thing we did in Berks County a lot, like, we would do it, like, try to find a different park. I don't know how often this was or how long we did it, but we did it a lot. Let's go to this park. Sometimes you get some really bad parks, though. And then you go to this park, and then you go to that park. And what I marvel in my own family, too, is how different your birth order affects the family you grow up in. And my youngest daughter she's 12, and she just lives with adults. She grew up quick, so she looks like an adult. And my 22-year-old's like a little tot that looks young. So when I line up my 12, 22, 20, people can't put them in order. And they've already thought the 12-year-old was the oldest one. 22-year-old doesn't make her too mad, but you almost can't tell them. You can sort of see in the face that makes sense. You look 12, not 22. But they kind of, because their height and everything, they look very much alike, but completely different worlds. Because when the 12-year-old lives in an adult world, everything is with adults. And when the oldest one was 12, everything was children. And so taking time with them, it really changes. And now and my family is a little unique because of the disability that there's a lot of things we can't do. There's just a lot of things we can't camp, hike, all kinds of things like that. So it can be hard to keep everybody together. We enjoy eating. So that's one thing my son likes to do and we like to do. Although we kind of all went on a family diet here this year, so we're all trying to do a little better. But so I cut out some of that good stuff, that good Mennonite desserts. But anyway, it can be tricky to find things that you can do together as a family. But take time, invest. It will pay back. When our children were young, we did have family worship. And I encourage that. I'll be the first to tell you, I don't know what my percentage was. Probably 40%. Probably 2 to 3 times a week. My philosophy always was, when we're home and we can fit it in, we had family worship. I wasn't quite like my dad, who would 6:30 in the morning, or late at night, God, have family worship. I wasn't that. I also wasn't my Uncle Stanley. I mean, you talk to his boys, it was like a theological exposition. When you would hear what Stanley's, we had nothing like that. But when Isaiah tells me what his dad would get into in family worship, it was like, wow. I mean, he would like practice on his kiddos. So I'm not that. And honestly, now we don't have family worship now. And I was thinking maybe we got to start establishing it again. As my children are older and this one goes to bed at this time and it just feels like we're not on the same page anymore. Everybody kind of has their own things they're doing and going. But I'm a big fan of trying to do it some. Now, and a lot of this stuff is, you're not a terrible person if you don't. I believe I'm a big believer in personal devotions and I pretty consistently do that, but I don't know that that was done as consistently before the printing press or not, when they didn't have access to that stuff. I don't know. So you're not a bad person if you don't, but I think it's a good practice to get into. And when I look back in our library of all the books, I was like, wow, we did have family worship a lot. I'm like, yeah, we read through those books a million times. We read through that book. We read through that book. So it's a good time. The children learn those Bible stories. So I'm a big fan of it, and I encourage it. Next one I have is make a lot of good memories and traditions. Traditions your children will love. And, you know, you do it 3, 4, 5 times and your kiddos will think you did it 50 years in a row. And they will remember it. And I know, you know, I'm sort of like the same way. When I was young and our family did something a time or two, I was sure we did it 15 straight years because you have such fond memories of it. And we have those. Now we don't, and, you know, and ours are a little different, and, you know, a lot of them revolve around food because we couldn't do a lot of things that other families are able to do. But I just jotted, we always go to Olive Garden at Christmas time, and we look forward to that. Right before school started, we always went to Chick-fil-A. And I'm not sure why. Went to Chick-fil-A. Around the time school ends, we often went to Ruby Tuesday. I think because we got gift cards, some of these events. So, all right, Ruby Tuesday, I like that salad bar and those ribs. Wow. So I'm headed for my ribs and that salad bar around the time school ends. The last day of school, we would try to go to Rita's for Italian ice. Just some of those things. There's a lot of other things that you could do. There were some of the things we did, but they are sweet memories. They are really neat memories that you would go back. So I say to families, good thing to do. Establish those traditions and your children will love it. Listen to your children. And this is a hard one. This is a hard one when they're young, too. And I think I do okay at that. Now, my son is very different than I am. And, well, we're supposed to be opposites that attract, right? I've been married 25 years this week. Sadly, I'm not even sure I'm going to see my wife on her 25th anniversary. Not sure if it's going to work out yet. We're not quite sure. And I know I'm preaching at Crossroads for Winter Bible School, so... So anyway, but we've been together 25 years. We're really different, okay? We are very, very different. And it works most of the time. The foxes are, we're multitaskers, okay? We're multitaskers. We can do about 3 or 4 things at one time. Nothing that well, but we can do 3 or 4 things at one time, and we're fine. You know, I was a teacher for many years, and I could have order in the class while I'm giving instructions, while I'm doing this. You know, I could just do that. And the other thing, and we're very athletic. And we always just could. I could work with a guy in school for 12 years, and he still can't catch a basketball with his hand. I just don't understand it. Because the ball just landed in our hands and stayed there. I mean, I could just pick up a ball in my younger years and just do it. We were just athletic. And that's almost embarrassing, but we were just very athletic. My wife's family is brilliantly smart, very, very smart, but they can only do one thing at a time, and that's why they're smart, okay? Because they can actually focus. Okay, we can't. Her brother is brilliant. He's just brilliant, brilliant. And my wife is very intelligent, too, and the world needs those, and my son is that way. So my son is very smart. He does one thing at a time. He does that thing so right. And I'm his primary caregiver. So you can imagine, every once in a while, we have some conflict. And I have to listen to him, because he takes things so literally. I'll give you one example here. Painting a house, and we got pizza. We're getting pizza because, you know, you always, every time you paint, you get pizza, right? And I told my son, because I'm all painty, you deal with the pizza man and give him the change. I think the bill was like, you know, say 32 or 34 or whatever. And I said, here's $40, whatever. I was tipping him fine. I said, give him the change. What did my son do? He gave him the pocket change. That's it. So the pizza man came, he gives him 32 cents. And like 2 or 3 minutes later, I still see the pizza man sitting out front. I think the pizza man heard me maybe or something, and he thought I was going to come give him the rest of the money. why is a pizza man still sitting out front? Like a couple minutes later, he was waiting for the real tip, but he went and he never got his money. So very smart, but you got to listen. And it can cause stress in our lives sometimes because you got to listen to him when he's talking. And I do remember, though, many, many years ago, when we were looking at our current house, I think we've been in there, 16, 17 years, and my son at that time was walking, and we were walking through the house, and he was so engaged, and we should do this, and he would have been an engineer if he would have been healthy. You know, he just loved that, and he was talking to me, and subconsciously, I would look at him, and I would listen. And my brother-in-law, who sold me the house, said to afterwards, Marcus, I just want to bless you for stopping. And you would like take your 7-year-old son seriously, and you would look at him and you would listen. And I always remembered that. And many times, when I've actually stopped to listen to my son like I should, it's because that was ringing in my ear. Because it's easy not to listen, because I don't need those 48,000 details. You just give me the 2 or 3 details. I got this. And when I do it wrong, then I'm in trouble, right? Dad, you didn't listen. Happens a lot with the newspaper. My son religiously reads the newspaper. And I mean, he has not missed the newspaper in, he has every newspaper for the last, I don't know how many years, 15 years? Now, he has probably 70, 80 he didn't get through yet. Some of them go back 4 or 5 years. But he is going to read every newspaper. And so we both read the newspaper. But he'll often say to me, Dad, did you see that? Yep, I saw it. Did you see? But yet I missed 90% of the article because I just scanned it in 5 seconds, got what I wanted. And so we're made differently. But listen, it can be hard sometimes. Have that appropriate physical relationship with your children. And, many mistakes have been made in the past across humanity and in our circles. And our circles are taking good steps and remedying some of these mistakes that we made in the past. But I always say that, our young ladies who have been appropriately touched by their fathers are not looking for it near as much in the outside world. And so having that appropriate touch with our daughters is good. Even your adult daughters, even your a hug and a kiss, and that is all that really never stops. And my children are so different. My 22-year-old would sit beside me with me in the love seat or in the recliner until she got married. The 20-year-old wouldn't do it for $1 million. It's just they're all made differently, and they have different needs, and an appropriate physical relationship is so beneficial and will keep your children out of trouble. And many of the older generation fathers, they didn't even quite know how to do that. It wasn't modeled to them. And I think we've been given a lot of good guidance by my generation of fathers and the younger ones. Modeling love at home. The old saying is true. We always treat those we love the most the worst. That's just rule of thumb. Your spouse, your children, it's very easy to treat those you love the most the worst. And we don't want to do that. We don't want to do that, but we want to model love at home. Giving our children positive things to do. That is hard today. I'm almost glad that, no, I shouldn't say it that way. Nope. But it's only getting tougher to be a good parent. Let me say it that way. I was in that age that switched over. I'm the age that was, in high school, I started typing on a typewriter, finished up on a computer. And then, it wasn't till, 15, 20 years ago, the internet came into our homes and the world is just different, and our homes are different, and it's a challenge, and if you're like me, now my children are getting a little older, but having young children, especially the next 2 weeks, we're off for 2 weeks at our school, and there is going to be war in the, not war, but there's going to be a lot of tension in trying to keep the children from being on the computer all day. Because this is, I don't know what the weather is going to be like. This is new. This is unprecedented. This isn't your own Christmas stuff. This isn't the summer where you're out swimming or whatever. That it's challenging. And I spend a lot of time as a father, get off. But then sometimes it's hard for me to be like, all right, yep, I'll play Clue with you. I don't really enjoy board games. I'll be honest, I'm not a game person. My family did not play games. But my youngest daughter does some like that. But trying to give him stuff to do, because if you're like me, you spend an awful lot of time saying, get off. How long have you been on there? And my daughter's smart. She disappears. And I'm like, then I forget about her. Then it's like an hour later, where's Shayna? Shayna! Oh, yeah, what? And you get older, you get a little more senile, too. And so we spend a lot of time saying, don't. But we've got to give them positive things back in. Embrace every stage of life. I'm going to go to 8:10 and then I'm going to quit, all right? So I'm about done here, but I don't want you to think, man, is this guy just going to go on drone on all night? No, I'm not going to do that. So you give me 12 more minutes and I'm going to be done. Embrace every stage you're in. You just want to do that. I'll admit, I'm going to tell you right now, I love the stage I'm in. Okay, this is the best. I love having teenagers and older. And that, so many people, the horror stories, you hear the horror stories of when they're teenagers. And I want to tell you, young parents, that doesn't have to be that way. I'm not saying you don't have some hard times, but I'll take this stage any day. I have so much fun interacting with my adult kids. And it is so much fun and so enjoyable. It doesn't have to be a nightmare. Embrace every stage you're in. I look at the young parents and I just like laugh. And our church is loud. We have babies and screaming all the time. And they're all embarrassed and I just laugh at them. And I'm like, yeah, I was there and my grandkids will be there. So I'm glad I'm not there. But embrace it. You know, your children are there to keep you humble. And you look like a bad parent sometimes. It's okay. It's all good. And embrace the stage you are in. And life changes so quickly. Oh, I just can't believe, and some of you that are older than me know that I, at every once in a while, will pull out the old home videos, and I'm like, wow, that was only 7 years ago, or 8 years ago, or 5 years ago. Wow, family changes quick, and all of a sudden, 5, 6, 7 years can radically alter what your family looks like. And you're looking back on those home videos and you're like, man, why didn't I enjoy it more? But you're kind of spend all the time like, ooh, I just can't wait till little Johnny's at least 5 rather than 2. But embrace every stage you're in. Because investing now pays dividends later. I marvel at how little influence I have on my children now. I have some influence now. But I'll tell you what, it's pretty limited. It's pretty limited. I think about it. I have probably the most influence on my 12-year-old. But they're pretty much, most of my influence is done. I still have some influence. But I marvel at how little I have. And how they've made the decisions they're going to make. And what largely my influence on them, even now, is all but done compared to what it was. And so investing when they're young pays dividends later, and they're such a blessing. I say it over and over and over again, you know, to young parents, because we got a lot of young families in our church, and they're all having their 4th and 5th child, kind of in that 3-4 range, and I just laugh at them because it's, you know, 6, 4, 3 screaming. You know, that's the ages. And I'm like, it's going to be okay. You're going to get through this. Because the age I'm at, man, my family's just giving back. And I'm just in the giving stage where they're just, I couldn't make it without them now. Even though my son is disabled, he's very good with the computer, and he he basically runs our church, and he does all my computer work, and he just gives back so much. I couldn't do it without him. And Sherry, my one daughter, is like she's our health coach, you know, and she's feeding me everything. I'm supposed to spit out anything. If it tastes good, you spit it out, you know how that goes. But, you know, she's just giving back so much, and she's always straightening us out. And my son Tyler is just such a blessing. You know, I wouldn't know what I would do if I didn't have him to help me take care of my disabled son. That he helps me he's going to put him in bed tonight and get him up tomorrow morning. And never once, ever I heard him complain. Why do I burden with this, sleeping with, you know, a disabled boy every night and taking care of him? But just giving back. And so the time is going to come. The time is going to come. So you young parents that are in those stages where it's like, you know what? It can be difficult. I am an example of where, boy, you're just going to be blessed. And there's going to be maybe five of them and two of you. So do the math. You will be blessed. Look for ways to honor your parents. You know, we live in a world that is changing. All of us here do things differently than our parents. And just because we do, we're raised differently. We're going to do things. I go places my dad didn't go. My dad, when he was young, would have never eaten in Applebee's or Ruby Tuesday. I think he would now, but we didn't do that growing up. I do that. We do things differently. And we're all going to do some things differently than our parents. And another thing, what Val Yoder has said, we have to figure out how we can honor our parents, even as we do things differently from them. And someday we are going to want our children to honor us. It's so easy to look at our parents as, you know what, they become old-fashioned. Or they're so yesterday. And you see that, we see that in the city. We're in we basically live in a foreign country. I think 60, two-thirds Latino, and the children are even more than a high percentage. And all the children are very fluent in both languages, and a lot of the parents are not. So they can tend to look at their parents as not smart because they're not bilingual. And it's easy for that to happen. Just, you know, parents have become old-fashioned. And I think setting an example to our children of honoring our parents is such a good thing to do. And I just encourage you, because our parents, most of our parents, are going to do things, some things, just differently. And for the most part, they were probably, for most of us, probably more conservative, probably didn't go to places that we go to. Find ways that we can really honor them as we do things differently. Our families all have unique needs. Mine's kind of even more pronounced because we have a disabled boy. But you have unique needs. And I would say not everybody can do things that you can do. I just put this out as a caution. And I know we live in a world driven by social media. And my children are all over social media. My wife has social media. I simply don't, because I have enough of things in my life to clog my life. But I'm not against social media at all. And it's used effectively, and everybody has it. The one thing I say is, you know, I feel bad sometimes. There's a lot of hurting families out there. They don't have money to do certain things. And you know, I'm probably not, you know, I feel bad for those that see all the wonderful things our families are doing and they can't do it. You know, my friend at church, her husband left her. So I'm even hesitant a little bit, you know, probably wouldn't post it anyway. But hey, it's our 25th anniversary and we're up at Bradford preaching. Aren't you jealous? But, you know, I'd be careful of that with some things just because it would hurt her. And I know you can only do that to a certain point, that you can't worry about everybody's feelings all the time. But we all have unique needs as families, and there's certain things we can do that others can't. So I would just say, be careful sometimes that we're not making others feel bad in some of the things we do. Sometimes you got to take risks for your children. Probably the dumbest thing I ever did. Dumb. I'm not political, okay? I'm not political. I believe in the two kingdom concept. I never voted in my life, never want to. Almost pity anybody that got to vote this year, no. But I've seen a lot of the presidents, and I went to a Donald Trump rally. Took my family. I told the church I'm taking them. Taking them to a Donald Trump rally, and I'm not going to clap. I'm just going to sit there the whole time. And I did. And my family thought that was kind of cool. That was scary. I'm not going back. I'll tell you, I'm not going back. Because that was scary. Those people, both sides, are a little crazy. And at one point, I mean, it was at the Harrisburg, it was at the Pennsylvania Farm Show building, and they had the state police, the horses and stuff there, and trying to break up stuff. And I'm in the middle of it taking pictures and video, and my family's like, "Dad, let's get out of here." They were like scared. I mean, those horses would like scatter the crowd because the KKK was there and they were trying to act up. And it was like, whoa, it was like third world, kind of like coronavirus. I was like, this doesn't happen in the United States. But anyway, you know, I think they thought it was sort of cool that I took a risk for them. Some people might think, what's wrong with that guy? But let's just go do it, man. Let's go. And so I think it's kind of fun when you take a risk and have some fun for your family. They'll look up to you a little bit. Reinforced good behavior. As I said earlier, it's very easy to always be like correcting all the time. But you know what? Oh man, it's so good to reinforce their good behavior. Be willing to discipline. The last point. Fatherhood's under attack. And Dr. Dobson has said this. The most important times, I think he said this for boys. Age 3 to 5 and puberty. And so many of the breakdowns come from the breakdown of the father in the home. One feminist has said, children need a father like fish need a bicycle, which we know is not correct. 95% of men on death row hate their father. And so be willing to be that father. Be willing to discipline. Proverbs 22:6. We've interpreted that so many different ways. And we don't quite know what it means. Which one really is it? I like the version that says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, it will not depart from him. It will not depart from him. What you build into your children, what you put in them will stay. And so, our family is wonderful. Provides so many needs for us. In state history class this week, we were just talking about it. All the things a family provides. And I love family. You probably figured out, I love being a dad. I love everything that goes along with it. My life is so far from perfect. Has not always been easy. But, man, it's just been a wonderful, and I'm so, so blessed. Let's pray. Thank you, Father, for this evening that we could be together. Thank you for family. And we're so blessed, many of us. And then there's probably some sitting here that haven't been blessed. But God, our heart goes out to them. And some sitting here maybe haven't been blessed, but they have an opportunity to be a blessing as a parent someday and give them strength. We too pray for the virus going around, and Lord, nobody quite knows what to do and what to cancel and what to keep and how to act and what to touch and what to shake. And just give us all wisdom, and we thank you that you are in control. And whatever the cause of this was, Father, I pray that it could be a teachable moment for all of us and that we could learn something from it. Pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. Closing song, and you can dismiss.
So as I was listening to Marcus talk about memories and dad,